Welcome to Conversations with Texas Scorecard.
Hey, welcome to Conversations. Today, I am so excited to get to sit down with one of my favorite podcasters and chat with him about his work at Texas Scorecard. We've been real excited to be an advertiser on his show, mainly because I like his show so much. And I hope that after watching this conversation with Buck Johnson, that you also will be eagerly awaiting that late Monday, early Tuesday hours when the Counterflow podcast comes out. Buck Johnson is a native Texan. He's a fellow who loves liberty and has a pretty unique approach to coming into politics and caring about liberty and caring about the Lone Star State, which I think you're going to really enjoy. So Buck, you and I have been sitting here now for a few minutes chatting before we got started. And as I said off screen, and I'm going to say again here, I might keep it for 3 or 4 hours. I hope you don't mind because I so enjoy your podcast. You know, they always say you should never meet the people you build up as celebrities. But so far, I'm so excited to get to have you with us, mainly because you approach podcasting from a way that's so different here. Often podcast is someone preaching at you. Often it's someone who is coming at you, telling you what you need to believe. And instead, the Counterflow podcast, you come across as a guy who's really just curious about the world around him. So before we talk about your podcast, though, Buck, you're a firefighter, mm-hmm. which, again, not exactly your typical political podcaster kind of thing.
That's for sure. Yeah.
So tell us, you grew up kind of split between Texas and out in California, back to Texas, and you decided you wanted to be a firefighter as a kid. How did that then translate into, you know, hey, it's 2018, I want to start mm-hmm. a podcast? What did you do wrong? What hit you upside the head to make you want to start in on caring about politics and public policy?
Maybe both of them are from my grandpa in a sense, because he was a fire chief in Houston.
Okay.
That was his last position. You know, he worked his way up through the ranks. He was extremely political. Interestingly enough, he was big working in and around the union, the Houston Fire Department Union, but he was like a staunch conservative. Sometimes union and conservative politics don't go together, it seems like, but he was a big Barry Goldwater guy and this kind of thing. Yeah. And so I think I kind of developed an interest in politics from him. Obviously, the job, I was influenced by him. And so I had an interest in politics in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm 44 now, if that gives people kind of a time frame. And I never let it go. And I just, even since I started the fire department, which was in 98, I was always political, always involved in politics, or at least interested in politics and reading. And at some point I just said, why don't I talk to these people? I read their books, I follow their articles, I listen to them online or whatnot. Maybe I could meet them and interview them. And so that's kind of where the podcast part came into play.
Yeah, so, you know, your podcast, your interview style, always comes across as you tend to ask the kind of question that I would hope that if I were to be visiting with some of these guests you have, that I would be asking, you mm-hmm. know, and I, you know, chat with a lot of, you know, friends who also listen to your podcast, and they all say the same kind of thing, mm-hmm. that you approach it, you know, from a, you know, someone who's interested, not someone who's, you know, I never get the sense that you're just waiting for the guy to shut up so you can make your next point.
Yes.
You know, tell me, you know, when, you know, as you're preparing for these interviews, as you're preparing to have these conversations, and it's so much less interview than just conversation with you. You know, what kind of work do you do? What goes into when we get to listen to that 45-minute or so podcast? What have you done leading up to that?
I've charted out ideas. I first do it like an outline. And then I move from the outline to the questions. And I've gotten to the point where I don't just read off a script and read the question. I'll kind of have it out in front of me, and I'll just take a few, you know, I'll skip around, I'll write notes as I'm going. I've noticed when I have a very good guest, they tend to It's weird. I just interviewed a guy yesterday, and he jumps to the next question I was going to ask or two from there without having a clue I was going there. And so I'm like, well, he got that. You know, it's interesting when that happens.
Right, right.
But I think that's good because it feels like it's a natural conversation. I do it a lot. I have friends from that I would call normies, you know, that aren't interested so much in this niche political space that I'm into. But I speak with them about politics, and they'll ask me questions. I've always been the guy that they will come, hey, so what do you think about the mask mandate? Or what do you think about this or that? And so I go into these interviews thinking, I want that person to understand
right.
what's going on, as well as the guy or girl that's steeped in this craziness that I don't want to dumb it down for that person, but I don't want to talk over the heads of the person that's just kind of curious about what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. How much of your I have the advantage of having read your bio and listened to your podcast for all. So I, you know, some of the things I'm thinking, you know, I've been wanting to ask for weeks and weeks now. So you also have had at various points the side gig of being a musician. Mm-hmm. I just found out not only is it a side gig of doing a little music on the side, but literally just found out it's kind of across the spectrum of styles
yeah.
of music. So how much of your of music plays into the way you do a podcast? Because musicians tend to think differently than the rest of us.
certainly the ones I was surrounded by think, unfortunately, different than me. So 2020 was kind of was a divorce year for some of my life amongst some of these musicians, if that makes sense. But yeah, it helps for sure. Being in bands through many, many years, a couple of decades now, helped me when I started to do live stuff. I wasn't nervous because there's people in front of me. You know, it wasn't a new thing to me. I wasn't some guy that was just sitting in an office and now all of a sudden I've got a bunch of people that want to hear me. I was used to that. In fact, and when those worlds met was in, we talked about Ron Paul off air a while ago, 2008, the Ron Paul Festival, I believe in Minneapolis, that was right next to the GOP function, whatever that was.
Yeah.
I played that with Jimmy Vaughn. I played drums. And then in 2012, I believe it was in St. Petersburg, Florida, Ron Paul did the same thing. And I played that. It's funny, I played all across the world for many years prior to that. But it took a political event to have the biggest crowd I've ever played in front of in my life. We were sitting there before it started like, this is a basketball arena. I've never done this. And my bass player goes, you're a drummer. Like, you're doing what you know how to do. Why would you be nervous? He goes, I'm not nervous to play bass. I could play it in front of two people or 200,000 people. It's what I do.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Okay, that helped. But yeah, it's like, here I am. All this music through all these years. I love politics all these years. When they combine, I'm in a stadium full of people. It was nuts.
Okay, so I want to talk about your politics and mm-hmm. about kind of the politics of the guests that you have on. I've heard you at various times, and I want to make sure I get it right. You talk yourself as kind of post-libertarian. Is that mm-hmm. fair? Is that a correct discussion?
We can use that. That's yeah. almost, it's funny. That's one of these, it came about organically,
yeah.
and it's almost become a slur used against myself and some of the guys that are associated with that
embrace
title.
The slur, right?
Yeah, so yeah. It's like we talked about with Lou Rockwell, like, you want to call me that? Sure, that's what I am. So I'm of the mindset where I'm fine with being called that. It's just funny how it became a slur, like, oh, those post-libertarian guys, they just want to X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel uncomfortable saying libertarian, that's what I am at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that a reflection of you no longer believe in liberty and limited government? I don't think that's true.
Not at all.
Or, no. Or is it a reflection of some of the people who have, you know, taken on the capital L libertarian have kind of sullied the philosophy in some ways?
It's definitely that. And as I've done the podcast and reached out to voices like at Chronicles Magazine and
yeah.
Pedro Gonzalez and people like this, you start to realize, like, these people that really have a lot of interests in common with me politically view libertarianism as a joke. And it's not the actual philosophy itself so much, it's the people that represent it, i.e. Cato types, that Lou Rockwell's always called Beltway libertarians,
yeah.
Reason Magazine types that are more so into libertinism than libertarianism. And so I don't want to be associated with that stuff.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, on a grand scale, that's what a lot of people associate that with. In fact, I still remember my father And it's funny, you go back to these little lessons I should have learned the time that I kind of blew off. So libertarians are basically small government conservatives, but without God. And I thought, I don't know, that's a weird way to put it. But now I totally see why he thought still thinks that, because that is often the case, and I don't want to be associated with that part.
Yeah. The other thing that's been very refreshing, you know, in with your podcast is you make no bones, no apologies about talking about how you, as a young man, rejected your faith, mm-hmm. became an atheist, and then, you know, in your more mature adulthood, mm-hmm. have reestablished your faith, and how much that impacts the way you approach politics and policy. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit. You know, how does your faith inform your actions as a political observer and as a political person?
It's still a journey at this point. Yeah. I'm still developing this where I'm, the path I'm going down, and as far as faith goes. But it certainly feels better to be headed in this, what I would call the right direction, than it did just a couple of years ago. I would say, and it's happening quickly, I might want to add that too, it makes me uncomfortable with some of the political mores or beliefs that I had, maybe, or the emphasis that political parties are as important as I once thought they were.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm about to put out an episode that's melding Christianity with libertarianism, and it's from a Protestant viewpoint, and it's with these guys that represent the Libertarian Christian Institute. And even as I think more about some of the stuff we discussed, I'm still a little uncomfortable, because part of me comes to this realization, why do you need the word libertarian involved in this at all? Mm-hmm. The non-aggression principle, you know, I think you could apply that to aspects of Christianity.
Right.
I'm not sure that you need the word libertarian involved in this. And so I'm kind of in this thought process now, and it's a journey. So by the time this is released, I might go, well, I've already thought further down the road than what I'm saying right now. But it's just a fun journey to be on right now. And all my curiosity that had been thrown into politics over the years, it's now I'm directing it towards Christianity at this point.
Yeah, very cool. The thing that, you know, comes across really heavily in your podcast, for as long as I've been listening, I can't think of many episodes where this doesn't come through, which is a heavy emphasis on the importance of folks engaging practically where they are and learning about how they can be involved where they are, you know, in their local communities, mm-hmm. and then finding ways to meet needs there. Why is that so important to you?
Well, because forever within the libertarian world, there's so many people that have these abstract discussions and theory and philosophy, which is fine. But if it's not applicable to real life, you're kind of just LARPing in a sense.
Yeah.
And so 2020 certainly helped this mindset for me. I saw how things were going in Austin. You start to see that people, typically left-leaning types, neoliberals and people, progressives on the left, they wanted my wife not to work. She owns a salon. They wanted her to not work. They wanted us masked up. Now we see that they want even further things in that direction. And I thought, I don't want to be around these people. I need to get out of this big, crazy city, move to a small town like Lockhart. But now I need to make sure that this peaceful little quiet town isn't infiltrated by that evil, basically. Yeah. And so what's a good way to do that? Well, one thought would be, why don't you do something and run for city council or some position of power of sorts, to where you can make sure things still stay squared away here in Lockhart, Texas. And not even conserving only what we have. I'm not saying like nothing fun can come in or anything like that, but just to have a say in the direction your town's headed in, well, then do something about it. And so that's why I'm kind of considering that realm right now, rather than an online abstract political discussion that's just LARPing with a bunch of ideas that if you're not going to put into practice, why do it?
Yeah, I think there's this, you know, you, I've run into this for years. We were talking earlier of this, you know, I need to only be engaged at this very high level, but yet if you're not actually impacting someone's life, if you're not actually improving the life of your neighbors and, you know, the people on the side of town, what have you really accomplished?
Right.
And I'll go back to the firefighting thing, just because I'm always intrigued by folks who do kind of a slightly different thing than you expect in the local world. The department does wonder how much of it, and someone who literally spends your days meeting a very practical need,
yes,
how much that impacts the way you view politics and policy. I find it very fascinating of a guy who, literally meets people at sometimes their worst moments and meets a very practical need for them, and yet your politics has moved and shifted into that same kind of realm. So I think that's pretty fascinating.
I think that's part of it. It's almost subconscious, because the firefighting thing, I've done it for 23 years. It's just innate. It's just part of me now. I can't even, it's just instinctual almost. And so I see people with these kind of lofty political thought ideas, and I'm like, well, I see people at their worst moment in real life, and I know what actually motivates people and incentivizes people. I know what happens in real life. You can talk about this on the far left or even in the libertarian world, but you sound like you're in the clouds, because I see things in real life. I see people with problems, and I understand what they need. And I tend to think I understand how to fix things.
Your podcast is called the Counterflow Podcast. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about why you adopted that as your mantra, which I think is kind of cool. But something that resonates with me far more deeply is the original name of your podcast, mm-hmm. Death to Tyrants. Absolutely love that. I understand that for good marketing reasons, one probably can move on that. But it does kind of think help our audience understand where you're coming from.
Yes, it should. And,
so tell us about Counterflow. Talk about Counterflow. Why that name, and what are you trying to communicate?
Sure. So I joined up with what's called the Renegade Media Network. Mm-hmm. When I did that, the owner of it, Thaddeus Russell, said, "I don't want it to be called Death to Tyrants. That's so strident. That pigeonholes you. It's this like, roar, I'm an ANCAP kind of thing." And he goes, "You're limiting yourself. And I think you're better than someone that should limit themselves. You can have that, but I want you to have a show on my network." And it was already, when you're a firefighter, you work every third day for right. 24 hours. So that eliminates at least two full days of the week to do something regarding my podcast. And I thought, that's too much. I can't have two separate shows. I can't do it. I'd already been thinking, I've had guests turn me down because of the name Death to Tyrants.
Okay.
They didn't straight up say it, but it was implied.
I knew what they were saying.
In fact, one of them has since come on, since it's been called Counterflow. I won't say who that was. So I thought, I've been thinking about a name change. Let's just break this clean starting January 2021, the new year. Jump on the network, change the name to Counterflow. I got Counterflow from a buddy of mine, just listed a bunch of names. Mm-hmm. And I saw it and I thought, that's interesting. And with everything I do in life, it seems to flow counter to the mainstream. So my political mm-hmm. thought clearly is not mainstream. The type of music I play is not very mainstream. Being a firefighter, I'm running the opposite direction. Everyone's running out of the house and I'm running counter to that flow. And so I started talking about it. I was like, well, that's perfect. And then Thaddeus, who owns the network's like, dude, that is you, Counterflow. This is wonderful. I'm not telling you, you've got to pick this, but I love it. And so I loved it. And that's kind of how it came about.
Very cool. All right. So you mentioned your wife as a business owner. Mm-hmm. Kind of stuff. I do have to note, you also spend a fair amount of time talking about your now two dogs.
Two French bulldogs.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell us about kind of how Buck Johnson spends his non-firefighting, non-podcasting hours.
This sounds so nerdy, but it's so true. Typically, I sit and read in my front room of my house with like music playing in the background and sitting there between pages scratching French bulldog backs because they're either on my lap looking out the window while I read or you know, looking up at me, wondering when I scratch their backs. I'll take them for walks. I've got a golf cart. Lockhart's a golf cart friendly town. Mm-hmm. Jump on the golf cart with them, cruise around. So yeah, I think the neighbors know me as that big tattooed guy with the two little French bulldogs. I didn't know this place was so dog friendly. I might have brought them.
But yeah, you should have.
They'd be
yeah,
driving yeah. us crazy yeah. too right now.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad thing. So, well, so Buck, last thing then for our folks, when can they hear? I kind of spoiled me ago. When can they hear Counterflow Podcast, and where all can they find the Counterflow Podcast?
I was impressed when you spouted that off right off the bat, that late Monday, early Tuesday. I was like, yeah. he does know what he's talking about. Yeah. So it was always
the best part of my week.
That's amazing. So, yeah. It was always on Monday. My producer and my video guy both came to me saying, Mondays are so busy, maybe like Tuesday? And I thought, it doesn't matter to me. I just picked Monday because it seemed like, you know, the start of the week. So now it's Tuesday, every mm-hmm. Tuesday. And what that did for those guys that produce it is it allowed them to get it out at a more decent time. It's typically noon, sometimes 2 o'clock, right. something like that now on Tuesday. The website's counterflowpodcast.com, which should be easy to remember. And I'm trying to get the YouTube numbers up. When the podcast was Death to Tyrants, the YouTube page would literally just be the screen of the artwork.
Right.
And so I never really advertised that. I didn't care. When I came aboard the Renegade Media Network, he was like, you need to do video. He goes, a lot of people, including myself, that's how we look at podcasts. And I thought, I never do that. Okay. So we've been doing video now, and I've been trying to roll those numbers up with subscriptions and everything through the YouTube page. So search Counterflow with Buck Johnson on the YouTube page, subscribe. And that's how you find me. And of course, on any podcatcher, anywhere you listen to podcasts, you'll find Counterflow with Buck Johnson.
Outstanding. Well, Buck, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. Appreciate the great work you do with Counterflow, and look forward to maybe, I don't know, at some point you being a city councilman, Buck Johnson, or something.
I sure hope so. That's I'm exploring it. That's what you're supposed to say at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I should say thank you guys for being a sponsor of the show, and thank you for the information that you guys put out here at Texas Scorecard. It's truly invaluable, and I think a lot of people appreciate it. I know I do.
Well, great. Thanks. Well, y'all, thanks for being with us today. Hope you had enjoyed getting to know Buck, and hope you will join me in listening to the Counterflow Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Conversations with Texas Scorecard. If you like this content, you can find more interviews and journalism at texasscorecard.com. Please also rate and review this interview on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.